day and welcome to the Food Scene on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, and today have the lovely women of the Canal House, Melissa Hamilton and Christopher Hersheimer. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes.
Excellent. But first, I want to thank our sponsor, White Oak Pastures. White Oak Pastures cattle are raised in a manner that is has stood the test of time, begins with southern sunshine, unpopulated country air, and fertile coastal soil. The cattle are allowed to roam the pastures and graze freely on sweet native grasses all of their lives. White Oak Pastures, all-natural grass-fed beef, has been available in all of our Whole Food stores in the mid-Atlantic states. We hope that you will support their program through your purchase of beef through one of the Whole Food stores. More information, www.whiteoakpastures.com. As you can hear, there's a little construction going on to the studio today as we are attempting to fully winterize the backyard patio. So don't let that bother you. We do not have, you know, sound effects, B-grip foleys, or anything like that. This is all natural, all live sound effects. So back to the Canal House, the lovely ladies that are producing some of the most spectacular cookbooks out there right now. Real, accessible, and I'm sure wonderfully tasty. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Excellent. Want to talk a little bit about your past lives, how you actually came to the Canal House. Christopher was a food and design editor for Metropolitan Home and was one of the founders of Sever Magazine and served as their executive editor for years. Melissa was a co-founder of Hamilton's Grill Room. It was that in New Jersey?
Mm-hmm, at Lambertville, New Jersey.
In Lambertville. And your sister, too, is in cooking as well.
She is.
Gabrielle at Prune.
That's right.
So you've been around food for a long, long time.
I think all my life. I started, yeah. What? Suckling and then eating well since I was a little tot.
You don't mean suckling pig, do you?
Oh, well, I grew into.
Yeah, she switched.
I'm an expert. Yeah. I'm expert at suckling pig.
But Melissa also worked at Martha Stewart Living, Cooks Illustrated before coming to Savour. And now the two of them collaborate on the wonderful Canal House cookbooks. It's thecanalhouse.com. Please visit it and be engaged and salivate over everything that I've viewed and attempted to cook from them. The Canal House is located where, in New Jersey? It's an actual physical location.
It is
not
a real,
just a branding device.
No, it's real a beautiful place. Little brick building that's right on the canal, Raritan Canal in Lambertville. And we have our studio, where we cook and photograph and design and write our books is in our space there, the Canal House.
Does it feel like an oasis, you know, having worked in and around publishing in Manhattan for so long, to separate yourself and be in what seems like a serene environment?
God, it feels like home. It is home. I mean, it's such a much more it's real. It's we're not concocting anything. We're not devising. We're just shopping and cooking and the way one normally does, you know? So it feels actually much more grounded and real.
Can you describe the house to a little bit more? Because it's not just a studio space. It's a living, breathing, functional house that has a garden, you know, a great kitchen.
Well, it has a garden. It has a garden on, you know, we're on the second floor of an old red brick warehouse building. And down below us is a beautiful canal that Melissa said, and the towpath that goes alongside where people walk up and down and people fish on the banks. And we have a little balcony that right now we have a grapefruit tree and Meyer lemons and fill, and we grow tomatoes there. But, you know, somebody asked us, I said, what we have is an office home. You know how people keep talking about, they used to talk about the home office.
Oh, yeah.
What we have is an office home. We live in that space, you know, almost every day. And, you know, it's a loft space. And we have beautiful little simple kitchen, very simple. And we have, we've been there about 4 years now, and we have all the rituals that you have at home. You know, in the winter, in the fall, right now we're so excited because we had our first fire. And it feels so great when someone, if you're the second person in, and Melissa's, she's firewoman. She is fantastic with fires.
I'm sure you dress up the part too and have a pole that you slide down in the mornings. And
Well, let's not go there.
That's a whole other show.
Yeah, that's her former life. That's her former life, but we don't really want to talk about that right now. But she does build, if you get there and there's a fire going and a little music on, we have a little espresso maker that someone gave us. And, you know, it's just, you're so happy to be there. And in the summer, we throw open these French doors, and the air blows in the wind, and the sunlight pours in. I mean, I guess both of us, I think I speak for you, Melissa, when I say that we, you really feel like we're so lucky. Everything's very simple and modest. I'm not, this isn't grand.
No.
But it's... It feels so good. And when people come to see us, we're so happy to have them too. And very simple and modest, but I think they catch our vibe.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it shows not only in the cookbooks themselves and the recipes, but I was exclaiming to Melissa how much I love your website because it's not taken too seriously trying to, you know, push out information. It's much more fun and kind of tangential, but the show, it's striking simplicity. There's just a list on one page that says tongs and recipes, some of them being a canal house salad and green goddess dressing. This was for the summer, and succotash. And then there was the words improvised fish poacher, and you click on that and it shows how to make an improvised fish poacher and fish stock. And there was the word spatchcock chicken and tweels, and then there was a picture of a fish spatula. And it was kind of, you know, not choose your own adventure, but it was kind of like rudimentary, but really methodical about, you know, all the expensive stuff that you eliminated and really honed in on the simple. And I mean, the fact that it shows on your website and then, you know, is developed in your book.
It is amazing. I mean, it's so, we need so little to cook as well as we do, you know, and it's very, very few things. I mean, we have no, our electric gadgets. What do we have? We have nothing. We have a blender if we need it, but it's way out of reach on the top shelf. We have a mortar and pestle because we had a nice, we thought we had a nice pepper grinder, one of those expensive Peugeot things with a six-cylinder.
I don't want to tell you this, but I think I bought the imitation
Peugeot. Well, that's just it. That's why it reached for it. Yeah. That's right. It was a Peugeot. That's right. With the electric. Yeah. And that didn't work. So we end up, the mortar and pestle we use for everything. There's the dishwasher, but we hardly use it. We wash the dishes by
hand.
And
then we use the dishwasher actually as a dish rack.
As the drain. As the dish drain.
We have no microwave.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but none of this is talked about. This isn't a philosophy.
Yeah.
It isn't. It's just that, actually, if you asked us to cook you something right in here, we could do it.
Well,
you could do it, too. Yeah. We could do it. You know, I mean, you'd just do it. You'd do, like, the wonderful MFK Fisher one where she peels the tangerine and she puts the... all the little segments, you know, on the radiator. And then it all gets bursting. And she sets them out on the windowsill so they'll get icy cold. And then she brings them in. And now they're icy cold and they're just bursting. And the skins are so... the membrane's so thin. And then she eats them.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I always remember that. So you can cook
anywhere.
It's like
becoming elemental, in a sense, knowing that temperature isn't just setting a dial to 350 for 15 minutes, but it comes from the sun. It comes and radiates off different textures. And
the fireplace that Christopher was mentioning, it's a little Franklin stove, and it has a little, we can put a grill on it that is cantilevered on this side contraption thing, and it swings into the fireplace. So we are, I mean, we do have the ability to grill and roast and cook over open flame in
we
this
do.
In this and we do. So we are lucky.
Yeah.
Well, and there's nothing precious. Nothing is precious about what we're talking about. It's not like, you know, Christmas, the air is blowing up and the it is just in its very elemental way.
If we can do it, that's our other part, is if in our very simple circumstances, we've reduced it.
With no money. Yes. We didn't go out and buy the pots and pans, and we didn't.
Yeah.
We had a couple extra things, Christopher at her house, me at my house.
Anyone can cook.
That's right.
If we can cook there, I mean, we happen to be cooks.
Yeah.
If we can do it in our circumstances, you can do it too. And of course, we're such believers. We want everyone to cook. Don't let anything get in your way. Don't let anything stop you. Just cook. Cook, even if it's a sandwich or a piece of toast with a cup of tea, you know, with a little jam on it. Cook it yourself. Don't go out, you know, cook.
And does that, you know, it was interesting what you guys were talking about, being able to cook with anywhere with any element. Do you feel like you guys kind of straddle the line between homesteading and DIY?
I don't know.
Oh, God, neither one. I mean, we don't think of ourselves as either of that. Homesteading?
And, No.
Yeah. But we could if we had to. Yeah.
Seems like a decent place to be snowed in.
Yes, it would be good to be snowed in with us. Exactly.
Excellent. Christopher is... I can't even think of the word because it's more than excellent. It's more than awe-inspiring.
Why don't we just say the finest,
the pinnacle, the apex,
ladies
the
and
acme.
We're bowing down to the master at this moment.
A photographer recently named one of Chow.com's 13, which was honoring people pushing the food world in a new and adventurous direction. But she's influenced so much and so many people in the aesthetic of food and how to project that. Even my own work, you know, initially seeing Savour that would show, you know, people's hands, flaws, stillness, a quiet calm, the process, the idea of even just looking down and making things 2D to show that there are shapes and textures and shades. The fact that it didn't appear in magazines and cookbooks prior to that was an excellent introduction to the world, so thank you for that. But how did you arrive at that kind of aesthetic? Where were you before and what had you seen?
Well, I think it's because if you love to eat and you like to cook, you know, I know what I'm looking at. And actually, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. And when we started Savour, we didn't have the deepest pockets or the most time. And so I'd say, I mean, I knew how to take a picture. And so I'd say, well, why don't I shoot it? And if it doesn't work out, we'll call a real photographer. And also, it meant I had... I'd been a stylist and also a food editor, and so I'd been on endless photo shoots that just made your teeth hurt because they go on and on and on and on and on, and all the air gets sucked out of the room, and the food becomes objectified, and it's not food. And it felt to me like what was so interesting about food is to capture this very ephemeral moment of this emotional moment of food at its moment, at its peak, just before it goes over the edge and starts going the other way. And so that's what interested me. And the way they photographed then was with light, a lot of lighting. Everybody lit all the natural light. And I used to just say, well, you're trying to make all this light. Why don't you just go over to the window? You know, I mean, it just seems so obvious. But oh, no, you didn't do that. So I just said, well, let's just do that. And so I remember going to a restaurant and just, and how do you look at food? You know, you look at food like you look at it, you know? I mean, you're from a particular angle. So it was all you know, I just say that it's because
I love
it.
Yes, if you're sitting at the table.
Yeah, how you're sitting.
Your counter height and you're standing there. So there is that intimacy that you brought and a naturalness that really made it much more delicious looking, didn't it?
Accessible.
Didn't it turn you on?
Approachable,
It makes it accessible. I mean, you need a knife and sometimes you want a knife and fork in there because that's how you enter into something. Sometimes you want to break something open because otherwise you can't really see the texture of it. So it was all, so I'm glad if people felt like that. I couldn't be happier because if it made food more accessible. But I do have a funny story of once we were, a number of years, we were asked to be, to photograph something. And so Melissa, I gave her the recipe. It was a cover of a book. And I gave her the recipe for a pie, and the young woman who called me to hire me, she just was told to hire me. She didn't know who or what anything I'd done. And she said, now listen, we'd like this to be a little bit messy, and we'd like some crumbs on the plate. And we said, we can do that. We know how to do that. Well, of course, when Melissa made the pie, the recipe, it worked so perfectly that when she cut the pie, there were no crumbs. the crust just was perfect. And we're looking at each other. And then we start breaking up the crust to make crumbs. And now we said, this is really messed up. Can you imagine? Now we're imitating ourselves. We're now imitating. It's not real.
Yeah.
We're faking the real. So we just thought, that's really messed up. This is now we've come full circle. We better start lighting all food shots.
I mean, do you technically eat things to create certain crumbles or patterns now?
If it looks better. Yeah. No. Mostly it's just like, God, that's too perfect or that. Or, I don't know. We'll shoot it. Whatever it wants to be, it is, we're sometimes the shot won't even be the shot that we're creating.
Well, that is the thing. We'll make it and we'll shoot it and then we'll go back and oh my God, Christopher, actually here's the shot. And then we bring that over, or she comes over to it. But, when you are it's sometimes the subconscious that is making the
And we
beautiful.
Won't, we work together for so
We're
many years.
We're just always reacting
just
and always watching.
Yeah. In the room. So if someone else comes to the shoot, they must think it's so odd. Well, because we hardly speak. She'll just say, what? What? And then I'll come over,
Yeah, exactly.
Well, okay. I'm grunting.
And we'll just be grunting at each other.
She knows exactly what I mean.
Yeah,
I know
and
exactly
then she'll
what
say,
mean.
I know.
Yeah.
And then she'll go get a
towel. When I actually, I witnessed you two working together at Barbudo, Jonathan Waxman's restaurant.
You did.
And I just saw this kind of zen calm happening. And I felt it to be very Buddhist. And then hearing you explain the Canal House itself, almost like one bowl, one spoon methodology, it kind of seems even more Dalai Lama than I initially thought. So, but it's quite a spectacle to behold.
That's nice.
But how long have you actually been working together and how did you initially meet?
Oh, I think we actually have probably been working together about 20 years. I think, because it was at the very beginning of Sever. And and Melissa called. She had a restaurant and she wanted to get into food styling.
Yeah.
Someone gave her my name. And I'd eaten at her restaurant, but I didn't know her. And I said, well, you don't have to go. I've eaten at your restaurant. I've seen how you put food on the plate. You are a food stylist, so you don't need to go intern with someone. You are a food stylist. So I had a shoot. I said, well, we don't really use food stylists at Sever. We don't do that. But maybe you'd like to come on a shoot. We happen to be doing something out in the area. And so,
I thought you were still with Metropolitan Times.
And she
came. There's a new food magazine we're working on. I can't really tell you much about it, but... And I said, another food magazine? This is, And then I met Christopher, and she was making a grand aioli, an incredible, beautiful spread. And
I wasn't shooting it. Bill Abronowitz was shooting it, but I was styling it. And Melissa came and helped. And I think I asked her to do something with a rabbit, and she just did it expertly. I thought, oh, God, thank God. I didn't have to explain what to do with a rabbit. Most people, you would, you know. She just broke it down and cooked it up. So, yeah. And then we didn't. Then
so it's a convenient. We live in the same area. And so that, and then also I had been wanting to, you know, start doing some work in New York. So all of that fell into place. And then after our magazine work and our commutes, we did long, long commutes. We decided it was time to come back to our neck of the woods and to bring the good work out to us and to set this studio up. And we started making lunch because where else are we going to eat? And we had the studio and we had the... So we just started making lunch for ourselves every day, and it just kept... It could be very simple or it could be a little bit more elaborate. And one thing led to another. We're like, maybe it's time that we did our own book now. And then... And the cooking seasonally is important, and it's what tastes delicious. And that was a very natural... fall into of that sort of how Canal House would be set up. And
yeah, small seasonal books that people were just enough for people to digest, just enough recipes to use. And then you'd put that book aside and a new book would come for the new season. And, you know, so we just thought that's actually how you probably would use a book. Sometimes big books are harder to get into, and we did believe in the seasonability, and we thought that people, we thought we'd make them so, I don't know, so inexpensively that people could throw them away, but it got...
I don't think anyone's throwing the Canal House cookbooks
but
away.
Now we say, okay, well, maybe you'll keep it, but we tried to keep them very inexpensive, too. That was important to us, and so, but at any rate, we have a nice following of people, and thanks to people like you, we're spreading the word, and we thank you for that.
Least I can do. Well, we're going to take a quick break and then return to talk about some of Christopher and Melissa's favorite recipes from the Canal House, other cookbooks, stories about food and otherwise. You've been listening to The Food Scene on Heritage Radio Network. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkell, here with the, not ladies, but wonderful women of TheCanalHouse.com.
People always call us ladies. Hey, ladies. Hey, ladies, I've got some trout for you.
Yeah.
And then from the fisherman down in the who's fishing in the canal. The windows are open. It's spring. He's out there fishing every single day. What are you fishing for down there? Oh, trout. You want some? Yeah, as soon as you catch some. An hour goes by. Hey, ladies, I got some fish for you.
I love that you have your own hawkers and mongers just like around your house. And
that was very cool.
Yeah,
we have a lot of wonderful local people raising wonderful things. That the whole movement has been amazing, you know, because all of that had disappeared. You know, I mean, let's face it, the supermarket came along and all those people out there, it was terrific. They could go to one place and buy everything. They have to raise it all. But now, it's really a great resurgence. And yeah. you're all, of course, responsible for all this.
I don't think we're responsible. I think you definitely helped spearhead the movement. But do you see that local sustainable seasonal show up in food magazines? Like, has it changed the aesthetic of how people approach photographing food and, you know, producing stories?
Oh, I just, don't you see that everywhere now? I mean, that just going to the place, seeing the animals. You know, we did some work for a wonderful organic meat company, Applegate Farms, I guess I could say it.
Yeah.
And because it's all organic or antibiotic free. Anyway, and when we did some work for them, they said, oh, you can't show an animal. We said, why can't you show an animal?
Where do you think this magically comes from?
They said, oh, we don't. It's like they you know, or the not certainly not the owner of the company, but some of the people, because you can't, you know, I don't think they wanted to make that association because it felt sad or mean or something. It's like, well, meat doesn't really come from those nice animals, you know. But and now I see that their whole process has changed completely. I think that people do, they're so connected. Don't you see it everywhere? I mean, all the magazines.
I mean, the transparency is excellent.
And if you're not, in fact, it's suspicious.
Oh yeah.
So I mean, it's gotten to the point where you have to be credible almost, or believable in the goodness of what you're making.
Yeah, does that feel like how you constructed the Canal House too, to make it a verifiable, almost organic seeming studio, rather than having all this artificial light and, you know, food styling equipment?
Oh. Well, I wish we'd thought it out that much. You know, we're pretty organic. You know, it's just how it is. You know, it's just how it is. So, I think it's just more how it is. We're not the, we're not the church of anything. You know, we want people to cook and eat, and we understand that everybody's busy, and resources are sometimes, people don't have great resources. And so, but we want people to cook, and we think that people should be local. They should be organic. We think all that, but do your best.
Yeah.
Just do your best. Do your best, but cook and stay away from processed food.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think what you do too, both through your books and through your, I wouldn't call it preaching, is like this great intersection of cultish and communal. That it does have, you guys have an amazing following of people that are devout to the Canal House and your recipes and your methodology and your mantra. But communal in the sense that you're giving, you're sharing, and it's one of those, it takes a village.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. Yeah, we all have to help each other out. And we're sharing our recipes. All we want to do is give what we've got.
Yeah.
That's what we're sharing. And we want to do it right so that we don't lead the people astray or turn them off in any way, you know. But yeah.
Let's salivate a little. Some of your favorite recipes that you've developed for Canal House.
Okay, well,
it's like picking your favorite child.
Well, we're in now.
And they're eating them.
There's one that we're just, we're, you know, right now we're into the schmorbrod, which
the open face sandwiches. Yes.
Which are all those beautiful little smoked fish and pickled fish and roe, and they make these beautiful little open face sandwiches, and that's a lovely thing to do. We're into
grower champagne.
That's not a recipe, but it should be a recipe.
Oh, I tasted Charles Elner from Epernay when I was, actually I didn't taste it when I was in Champagne, but I almost can't drink. Well, I can drink bubbles no matter what it is. But
of course.
Yeah, it's.
Well, the grower champagne, we have a whole little chapter about it, just that, you know, growers have to grow 95% of their own grapes and then make their wine. And what happens is they're very small, so they don't have huge marketing accounts or anything, and they're quite affordable champagnes. And what's so unbelievable is they're just filled with personality. You can, oh, the flavors, you know, they just are filled with whoever's making its personality and all the grapes from that particular year and that particular vineyard. So we love it, and we think that's a great thing because you're supporting someone small, you know, who's trying to do something. We love that, is to support people who are trying to do something. It's not easy. But we kind of get into it in this particular book, but we have a funny recipe called A Goose with 10 Legs. And it's one goose, we say, well, you know, because you need the ta-da factor. You need the goose. And then you can buy goose legs. And so just cook them and then give everybody the legs. And then,
which is where all the meat is.
Yeah, that's where all the delicious meat is. So we say a goose with 10 legs. That's our sort of Christmas recipe. And so, and on. What else, Melissa?
We have roast pork belly and we have... delicious. Those sugar cookies, very simple, but buttery, and a tiny, tiny little bit salty, delicious sugar cookies. And
yeah, Melissa's actually flipping through, what is this, volume 5?
This is volume 5, The Good Life.
Aren't they all, though?
Yeah.
Well, we made sausages, and we made these delicious sausages.
Yeah. You know Paul Bertoli of Framani,
yeah.
And he is our guru, not because he really is our guru, but because we read his book, that wonderful book, Cooking by Hand. Wonderful book.
That cover was just so like enigmatic of how I always want to cook.
Yes. And they, anyway.
And he has guided us too on occasions, and
we send him pictures and he'll say, that looks like it may have the dreaded schmear. So we go back and make it, you know, because that's how you have to keep everything icy cold.
Yeah.
So we kind of tell you how to make sausages because now that's more involved. But, you know, you have a little more time. It may be raining outside and you make something. Well, you will never feel the same about a sausage after you've made your own sausages. It's quite simple, but it's just you have to be very meticulous about it so that they're not dry and that they're juicy and they just burst with flavor. And we have a little thing that we like to do is to make little tiny sausages and then you cook them over the fire and they are hot and bursting with juice. You pop a little sausage like that and then you slurp an ice cold oyster right afterwards.
And knock back a little.
Grow champagne.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
The Good Life.
That's The Good Life.
That is volume 5.
In a nutshell, right?
Run out and get that book. Aside from The Canal House, though, you've collaborated on a whole bunch of other cookbooks. Name a few people that you've worked with.
Oh, well, we just shot a book that actually won Best Book of the Year, Cookbook of the Year, and Best International Cookbook, and that was the Country Cooking of Ireland, Coleman Andrews, the esteemed cauldron.
Yeah.
Coleman Andrews wrote that. And we have a book coming out, I think it came out yesterday, and that we shot, and that is In the Heart of the Artichoke, David Tanis's new book.
He's the platter of figs.
He did a platter. And we shot that too.
Yeah.
And he, you know, comes to Canal House and then it's just the love fest because he cooks and he just brings it over and then we just say, well, it's like shooting fish in a barrel, you know, it's just there. You just shoot it. There's nothing to it, you know. So,
And I remember Michael Salakis's How to Roast a Lamb in the last couple of years.
We shoot with Lydia Bastianich.
Yeah.
And
We did The Green Kitchen.
Oh, we did The Green Kitchen with Alice. That was wonderful. That was really fun. And we photographed, did portraits of all these chefs at the big Slow Food Nation in San Francisco. And then we also shot out in Alice's house. That was very fun, a wonderful collaboration.
So do you miss traveling? Because, you went out to San Francisco for Slow Food Nation, but it seems like you're having a lot of people come to you now. Is there a different approach or structure to how you work now that you have a home base that is the place to go?
Well, we love that. We do love people coming to us, and we love being there. And both of us traveled for years, and so it feels very nice to be at home now. But we did just come back from almost 3 weeks in Italy.
Would it make sense to travel for the project, and it really makes a difference for the imagery, then we do, and we love it, because you need that imagery. It's really important to the book.
Yeah, if you need the authenticity of the place, or if the place is part of the story, you need just the atmosphere around the photograph. It will change it.
Yeah.
Because you are, I mean, if I say this to anyone who's trying to take pictures, what you're really trying to do is make an emotional connection. I mean, that's right. That's the satisfaction of taking the picture,
yeah.
Is that someone, when they look at the picture that you took, they will recognize something and they'll feel your picture. I mean, sometimes you have to be in the place. So we do travel a little bit, but not the way. I mean, it used to be really on planes all the time.
Yeah.
But
and what were you recently doing in Italy? Or is that...
Yeah, we were working on and Coleman's next book, Coleman Andrews' Country Cooking of Italy.
Excellent.
Which will be out in
next year in the fall.
Yeah. And so there's been France, there's been Ireland of that series.
Yes.
And
now Italy is coming up. And then we're also doing something for Canal House.
Yeah, what's next for Canal House? I mean, you got the good life. Is there going to be the great life? Is there going to be...
the better life?
Yeah.
The best life?
Yeah. The Love Fest?
Oh, the Love Fest.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a whole other book.
Now, what... Well, we won't even go there.
Yeah.
The grocery store. The supermarket. The
Our
supermarket
next one.
will complete the set of three, of four, five, and six. So... The grocery store.
Because in the winter, you don't have farmers markets anymore.
Yeah.
So you're sort of faced with the grocery store. And so we're going to say, well, this is what we do. Because it's always what we do. So this is how we tackle the grocery store. And this is what we make. And it's appropriate for that time of year since we try to.
I mean, any specific grocery stores? Are you going to Whole Foods? Are you going to Kroger's? Are you going to Pathmark?
We won't. We're not saying any particular thing.
Yeah.
We're just saying, yeah. I mean, you do the best you do with what you have. But, everyone, because everybody works there. Everybody's working, and you race home at 7 o'clock at night, and you pray to God there's something in the refrigerator. And if you happen to be lucky to pass a store, we have a little farm market that is open, but only until 7 o'clock, and then they close in the winter.
Right after Thanksgiving, they close.
They close, and so you can't sail by there and pick up something.
We are lucky. We do have a farmer's market in Stockton, New Jersey, that's under roof and does go the full year.
But, in the last year.
Yeah, only. And
but only on the weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, and also, completely. So we're into the root vegetables a lot. And
that's
okay. But so the supermarket will be...
No, I love that. I love that. I don't think... Using the word organic, I felt like it was a very good descriptor, but then also realism, knowing how much you can actually do with what you have.
Yeah.
Someone asked if sometimes we're asked to supply recipes and to actually put the word organic in all the in the ingredient list. And we're like, it doesn't. If you want to shop organic, you can. And if you're not able to, then you don't have to. But to put the word organic in front of every single organic
I mean, that
beans,
feels silly.
Organic. Yeah. So
that's just protocol. That's just regulation.
I know.
I think I'm hoping to see a shift to the word trusted or reliable. Something that feels like you have the connection with the person, the product, more than just the stamp of approval.
Well, more and more people, they're so aware. It's just all over the news about food. And people really, I think everybody cares about that. Who couldn't care about that? People have children. They worry about their own health, their family's health, And so, it's just mainstream. So people do want to know the source of their food and that they can trust it. Of course they do. Of course they do.
Yeah. Well, we can keep talking forever, but I'm going to absolutely famished too at the same point, discussing, reading through, and you know, imagining what's next for the Canal House. But I just wanted to thank both Christopher and Melissa for being on. It's an inspiration to have you here and to know that the Canal House exists. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having us. Definitely. This has been great.
You've been listening to The Food Scene on Heritage Radio Network. I hope you enjoyed. Definitely go to thecanalhouse.com. Check out what's cooking, seasonal, local. Want to thank White Oak Pastures again for sponsoring the show. Producer Jack Inslee, engineer Nat Wiener, and I'm telling you, I am starved, and I know what I'm going to be making for lunch, for dinner, for you know, the next couple weeks. Thank you again. You've been listening to Food Scene. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkell. See you Tuesday, 3 p.m.